Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning here on the Genesis Communication Network, we strive to expose the destructive and often deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, even with military and economic schemes. Our mission, instead of merely presenting the news, is to help you understand what is occurring behind these headlines, as well as how this news will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with God. Our phone number for anyone who would like to question, criticize, affirm, or just discuss anything that is presented over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, we were covering a story considerable length about malfeasance in the Vatican and the problems that the Roman Catholic Church is trying to cover up. Well, the rabbinical types aren't quite as clandestine in their actions. France's top rabbi, Gilles Bernheim, has resigned amid a scandal over plagiarism. Rabbi Bernheim had admitted to plagiarizing several authors and about lying about his academic status on his CV, reports said. We don't use the CV all that commonly here. We typically use the term resume, but CV is a fancier term. It is based upon the Latin curriculum vitae. Curriculum vitae literally means course of life. It's referring to be the course of one's life and the things that they have done over their life. Typically provides us with an overview of a person's experience and their qualifications. And that, of course, is interesting that here is a guy, he has made it to the top of the religious food chain, and he's doctoring his resume, artificially saying things, falsely saying things that he has done that aren't true to make him more credible. So a religious leader seeks to find ways that they themselves can be perceived as being more credible, even when those ways are dishonest. That is the difference between them and what we achieve to do here. I'm the first to tell you that I have no qualifications that would impress anyone, and that if you're looking for qualifications, you're probably looking in the wrong place for answers. This individual received this statement from Sammy Goshlan, who is the vice president of rabbinical affairs in France. He said he recognized his faults, he apologized, and he gave explanations. Actually, no. He said that the plagiarism was all the fault of his assistant, and he said that he would not resign. He was just forced out. His resignation as a grand rabbi, which I guess is better than just being a rabbi, was a solution that brings more serenity. We all agreed. Well, the council that determines who is grand and ordinary certainly agreed. Rabbi Bernheim had been accused of plagiarizing authors for sections of his book, 40 Jewish Meditations. You know, Jews are particularly prone to join minions. A minion is when ten Jews join together for a common purpose, which is to read or recite. It's better, I guess, if you can do it from memory, a Jewish meditation or a Jewish prayer. Now, there is this mythology that Jews are Torah observant, and they're probably saying something that responding to something that God said to them in the Torah, but that would be a complete myth. They are reciting rabbinical prayers. They are prayers that those who are not Torah observant, but instead are Talmud observant, have written. And they do so bobbing their heads up and down in unison as minions. It is this kind of thing that God says in particular that he not only does not like, But he says the prayers of such individuals, the faces of those who are praying such prayers, look like dung to him. The story, go ahead.
I find that very funny because, like, it fits in, right? It really fits in with what he, everything that we know about Yah. Because, frankly, it seems more like he wants it to be a very social, very, just, you know, hey, good to see you, nice to meet you, you know?
Yeah.
And like, the fact that you bring up that people are, like, bobbing their heads in unison, it's like, everybody's doing the same thing.
Right.
You know,
it's like the Islamic prayer. They all bow down in unison at the same time, reciting the same dribble.
Yeah, and how your relationship is with Yah may not be how mine is, but at the same time we're both doing the same thing. We're both going to the same place. I think that again it applies to the free will.
Yeah, God's view is that He has introduced Himself to us, so we can get to know Him if we want. He has provided a covenant that we can join if we would like. It has terms and conditions which we can examine and choose to respond to. And then He has a path where He does everything that is necessary to enrich us in every conceivable way, making us immortal, perfect, adopted into His family, enriched and empowered. And God says, there it is. I'm going to do everything I can to explain it to you, to share with you the perspective of I want to have a relationship with you where you are my children, I'm your father. I'm going to try to lift you up, and once I have lifted you up, then I want to be friends. I want to go and have fun together. So what God is looking for initially is for us to care enough about who He actually is to get to know who He is and what He is offering, and then to respond to that. And once we have responded to it, become part of His family, then our conversation with Him can be on any number of things. But there are two basic kinds of prayers that just God finds repulsive. One is the Christian prayer, where an individual is rattling off, oh, please take care of Uncle Joey. I really wish you could get rid of this nagging illness that somebody else has. And, oh, I play for my godforsaken country, and, you know, tell me what your will is. And, oh, by the way, I really want that job. Or maybe you could help me win the lottery. It's a bunch of wish lists that have nothing to do with anything God's interested in. You know, if you want to talk to God, since He is God, might the discussion actually begin with something that God's interested in? Might you come to, you know what He's offering and respond to Him as opposed to rattling off a bunch of drivel and then ending your prayer by saying, in God's name, amen. Amen is the name of the Egyptian sun god.
Do you go into somebody else's house and tell them what to do?
No, it's like walking next door, not bothering to knock on the door, just barging right in and say, you know, I would really like a new car. My leg hurts. I appreciate if you could fix that for me. And I know you were probably busy doing something else that was of interest to you. I don't care what you're interested in. This is what I want and what I'm interested in. That kind of prayer.
I need the remote. I got to watch my show.
God says that from His perspective, that looks like BS. And He uses the term BS, the fluid and substance that comes out of the south end of a bowl that is headed north, because of the fact that the bowl was the primary incarnation of Satan and pagan gods of old. And the part that is sent out the backside of the bowl is about as appetizing as your average Christian. And that's what God is saying. Now, it's even worse, I think. I'm not sure it's worse. It's equally bad to mumble a bunch of man-made prayers that were authored by people who don't know God about a God that they have created in their own image. And this notion that you are somehow pleasing God, you're showing devotion to God by bowing down to Him and running at the mouth with some religious prayer is every bit as bad. You're not thinking, you're not talking, you're just spewing. Can you imagine a God so insecure? The guy would say, man, I just really love it when they all go and bob their heads up and down and spew out that rabbinical stuff. I just love it when those Muslims moon me. I mean, what could be more fun than somebody mooning me with an AK-47 right next to them, teaching their kid that they should go out and kill because that's the highest calling.
I'd like to help you, but I gotta stop. This is my favorite time of day. I gotta watch these guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, these guys get my attention. That bowing in unison really trips my trigger. Just love that stuff. Oh, and it is just, it's sad. Anyway, Rabbi Bernheim is said on his CV that he had been awarded a prestigious but rarely granted philosophy. You see, well, there's no reason for me to admit that I have no qualifications. I can't even pronounce philosophy, and that he had been granted philosophy academic status from the Sorbonne University, a real prestigious school in France. But it was not true. It had emerged that a number of his articles in opposition to gay marriage were actually plagiarizing the guy that just got caught in the homosexual web of prostitution in Rome, Pope Benedict XVI, known to us as Cardinal Ratzinger. So he was plagiarizing the rat's comments on gay marriage. And then it turned out that he ended up initially denying all wrongdoing, and that he said that the plagiarism in his books and articles had all been carried out by an assistant, and that I am not going to resign. Okay. Didn't work out well for him. Speaking of misguided, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, said on Tuesday that he had agreed to work with Israeli and Palestinian leaders, as if there were such a thing as a Palestinian, to boost economic growth in the occupied, as if there was such a place called the occupied West Bank. The West Bank is Judea and Samaria. As he seeks ways to revive Middle East peace talks. Quote, we agree among us that we are going to engage in new efforts, very specific efforts, to promote economic development. Now, if America had an answer for economic development, don't you think we might try it here in America first? We'll return to this comment and underscore its foolishness when Shattering Myths continues after the break. To Shattering Myths. Scott, it dawned on me that perhaps these two stories have something in common. Well, first, we're looking at a grand rabbi, a religious leader that thinks that the only way that he can be credible is to artificially inflate his own credentials, which is how rabbinical Judaism began in the first place. Man wanted to be considered, religious men wanted to be considered more empowered and more important than God. And so this guy is just manifesting that exact same kind of scenario. Now, as we turn to the United States, which is bankrupt, we're the most indebted nation on earth. We just announced that our unemployment rate fell because 500,000 people stopped looking for jobs. Is the reason our unemployment number fell because we only measure those who are unemployed and are actively looking for jobs. The actual number of unemployed Americans of working age who are capable and able to work is 45%. So here's the Secretary of State in this devastated country economically that is going to a mythical people in a mythical land and telling them that he wants to contribute to their economic success, of which, by the way, they have never known any except when they were integrated into Israel. But the solution isn't to reintegrate them back into Israel, but instead to completely isolate them from Israel. So how do we get to be this stupid? You know, what is it that causes this arrogance in man? Why does man think that he has the right to tell God what we want as opposed to maybe listening to God and finding out what he's offering. And it dawns on me that perhaps the whole problem here is a complete and utter misunderstanding of who God is. You know, once you come to know who God is, the first thing you recognize is credentials are meaningless. Once you come to know who God is, bobbing up and down while prostrating yourself and mumbling some rote prayer is absurd. And we were focused on that at the in our program yesterday. There was one word in particular that told us everything we need to know to resolve this problem. If Americans would consider this word from God's lips, if the rabbinical types would consider this word from God's lips, if those who are religious around the world would recalibrate their understanding of God so that it matched who God really is, then all this nonsense would go away. We wouldn't be puffing ourselves up with pride. We wouldn't be bragging about our credentials. We wouldn't be trying to deceive people into thinking that we have answers when all we have is problems. We wouldn't be spewing nonsense. Remember the passage, Scott, that we covered yesterday? Let me reread it and let's focus on the place that resolves all this. Almighty God, blessed and adored, he knelt down. He diminished himself to greet and to lift up his association with the seventh day. And he set it apart, because indeed during it he observed the Shabbat. On account of all of the heavenly work and on account of the spiritual message, which by way of the relationship he, the Almighty, had conceived and created and then acted upon and engaged in. Tells me that once you come to understand who God is and what he's offering and what he has done and the perspective that he's providing, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or pretend to be one to figure this out.
You mean he doesn't want you to nod your head in unison with other people or move him?
Can you imagine, have you ever watched one of those Japanese introduction ceremonies where the Japanese official or businessman or whatever it might be comes and they bow at the waist, leaning towards the person, and, and if it's particularly if it's a Westerner who wants to get close and then reach out and shake hands, they get close, but the person bows down and says, well, I got to bow down. And the two, they bow down and all they do is butt heads. Banging hands together. If both of us are trying to bow down at the same time, we got a real problem. If both of us are boasting about having answers at the same time, nobody's listening.
Well, yeah, if you bow your head as he's trying to lift you up, you're not going to notice the invitation to get up.
You're not going to even see his hand when he reaches down to lift you up. And aren't you at cross purposes with him? If he's bowing down to lift you up, why in the world would you go in the direction opposite of what he's trying to do on your behalf? To Shattering Myths, we were considering a statement that God made that is presents God in a way that is the inverse of the way that God is presented from a religious perspective. The Muslims are told, because Satan wants to be greater than Yahweh, that God did not need to rest on the seventh day. And God here is just saying that he wasn't resting. He was observing the Sabbath. He was participating in the Sabbath, and that the way that he participated in the Shabbat was to engage, was to work, was to convey his message. The other aspect of this that, of course, is interesting is that Christians want to believe that salvation is a gift, and the moment you suggest that you have to do something, oh, they just get up and legalistic, foul, Torah, antiquated, old-fashioned, go away. All their bells and alarms go off. And yet, well, salvation, God did all of the work for salvation, which is what he's saying here. You can't participate in a relationship without engaging. Yeah, I use the term for acting upon and engaging in at the end of the statement. It's asa. Now, if God is willing to engage in this relationship, if he's willing to act upon the message that he has conveyed, you're telling me that we shouldn't? That you're going to have a relationship here that God has engaged in, that he has conveyed, and then he has acted upon, but the appropriate response from us ought to be doing nothing? And again, every aspect of religion misrepresents who God is. Now, the one who wants us to do nothing is the Lord, Satan. Because if we do nothing, we're easy to fool. You know, we're dumb as dumb can be. You know, it's easy to fool someone who doesn't know God, who doesn't know what God is offering, who doesn't hasn't invested the time to consider what God has to say and has to offer. If you know, you're tough to fool. If you don't know because you've done nothing, anybody can play you for a fool. And that's why there are so many Muslims. That's why there are so many Christians. I mean, Paul was obviously wrong. So was Muhammad. Their arguments are irrational. Both of them remove something the real God actually said out of context and then misquote him and twist it to infer the opposite of his intent. And so all you got to do is look at their citation in the original document and say, wait a minute, they've twisted this to mislead. If the best they could do to promote their new religion was to misquote God and convey the opposite of what he said, then I ought not trust them because that's not a trustworthy thing to do. But because Christians think, Muslims think, Muslims believe that they're predestined, so there's nothing that they can do to change their fate. And Christians have been led to believe that the moment they do anything, they're being back in the Torah, and that's condemning. Well, the real God presented himself, lowering, diminishing himself to lift us up, doing the thing that loving fathers do for their children. He is then shown observing the Shabbat because that's the time that he did the most important work on our behalf. He is then shown conveying his message and engaging in the work, which is to raise us as his children. And then he's saying that he acted upon, engaged in the very message that he himself had conceived and engaged in the very relationship that he had offered. All of that is being communicated here. And if you ignore any aspect of it, you're going to misrepresent who God is, what he is offering, and how we should respond. You know, we talked yesterday. There are lots of people that can talk the talk. There are very few who can walk the walk. And some of those who walk the walk, who lead by example, aren't articulate. They can't talk the talk. Yahweh is very unique. He has talked the talk. He has walked the walk. Why don't we listen to him? Why don't we follow him? Instead of trying to recreate a God that is in Satan's image, a God to be worshipped, a God who wants nothing in return from us, a God who is unnamed, a God who wants us to bow down to him, a God who doesn't care what you believe so long as you believe, doesn't care what you say so long as you say it, rather than us remanufacturing or creating out of whole cloth our own God, whom we are free to paint whatever color we wish, whatever shade we wish, why don't we listen to the talk of the real one? Why don't we walk in the steps of the real one? Now, his talk is presented in his Torah. His walk is presented in his Torah. He actually got down so that he could walk with the children of Israel, leading them right away from the most political and militaristic, the most religious and economically disadvantaged, if you will, morally corrupt nation on earth, Egypt. God even got down in the mud, in the most hideous place on earth, the place that he would despise most, to lead his children away from that to a promised land. There's so much we can learn from God, and yet we seem so unwilling, so stiff-necked, so thick-headed. It's like God gave us ears that would close and mouths that wouldn't. It's like we were designed differently than we really are. We were considering other statements related to Barak yesterday as well. Genesis 1, 27 and 28, Bereshit says, "So God created the man, Adam, in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God knelt down next to them, saying to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply.'" Barak, para, rabah. Think about that. So here's God. He's the creator of the universe, something we don't normally ascribe to God anymore because, you know, Christians have their Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ is the sum total of God, and they just love their little precious Jesus. And Jesus is not the creator of the universe. Jesus is not the author of life. Yahweh is the creator of the universe. He is the author of life. And here he is, after having created the universe and authored life, on his knees. And it's as it should be. If God said, "I tell you what I'm going to do here. I'm going to create a universe, and then I'm going to conceive a life form in this universe. And the purpose of that life form will be, I'm going to program this life form so it tells me how wonderful I am. It's going to be spectacular at blowing smoke. Yep, this is going to be a political and religious life form that is going to lie and misrepresent and be disingenuous. That's what I want. I want this. I'm going to create the entire universe, go to all of this trouble, because I want what I create to tell me how wonderful I am. I want what I create not to look me in the eye, not to have a relationship with me, but to babble at me. Meaningless platitudes. Bow down to me. Boy, that is really going to trip my trigger. Boy, won't I be great then. Now, it's sick. It's twisted. It's insecure. But if God said, "I want to create life, and I want to give this life free will, I want to give this life the ability to exercise good judgment so that we're like one another in this way, I'm going to give it a spirit so it can use its consciousness to observe, and I'm going to create it so that it's an upright creature that can walk with me, can engage with me, I'm going to create it so that it has the ability to listen and to respond, and then with this creature, I'm going to do everything I can to empower them, to enrich them, to hug them, to lift them up, to adopt them, to enrich them, care for them, nurture them, protect them. I'm going to offer everything that they could possibly want, so long as they're willing to come to know me, value what I'm offering, and respond. All you got to do is take the time to get to know and then respond. God will do the rest." And yet, we have a God out there that doesn't want anyone to respond, because that requires knowing and doing, And no, that won't work. But here's the real God. Created man in his image. Gave him life. Created male and female. And then knelt down next to him. Adoring and blessing him. Greeting him in love. Lifting him up. Saying, be fruitful. Flourish. Be productive. Increase. And multiply. Become exceedingly great. Being enlarged. Reaching a very high point. That's his promise to us. And you see, it's interesting. Rabbah is the last statement there. Rabbah is the Hebrew word that became twisted to became the title Rabbi. Remember the grand rabbi at the beginning of the story? Well, rather than recognizing that what God is saying is that when I am on my knees, myself as a dad to lift you up, that I am offering you the opportunity to flourish and to become exceedingly great. Because I'm going to give you everything I have if you'll respond to me, if you'll take my hand. And so rather than recognizing that greatness is God's gift to his children, rabbis said, no, we want to be great because we want to have the authority of God. We want to be able to establish rules that people have to follow. We want to be able to be our own gods and have our own religion and our own witness so that we can control people. Rabbi. Rabbah became rabbi. And it all comes full circle. That is what happens when we have a warped impression of who God is and what he is offering. The real God wants to be our dad. All he cares about is his covenant. And he is inviting you the opportunity to be his child. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We're considering all that we can learn from Barak in terms of understanding who God is and what he wants. Barak tells us that the real God is the antithesis of the Islamic God. He's also the antithesis of the Christian God, but probably not to the same extreme, in the sense that the Islamic God's primary desire, according to the Quran, according to the Hadith, is to have man bow down to him throughout the day and prostrating oneself on the knees, head to the ground, is the nature of the relationship between an Islamic God who cannot be known, who cannot be loved, who cannot be engaged in discussion, who reigns through fear, whose primary objective is to kill and to torture, and the Christian God that just wants you on your knees. That's why Roman Catholic churches all have prayer racks in the pews, because you're on your knees so often. What most people don't recognize, of course, is that by bowing down, in a Roman Catholic Church, what they're really bowing down to is the priests in the church as opposed to God, because God has never been in a Roman Catholic Church. But as we consider Barak, the fact that it is God who is doing the kneeling and the bowing, and he kneels and bows most adroitly through his willingness on Passover and unleavened bread to diminish himself, to bow himself, to receive the punishment that we would normally receive. There are two aspects of bowing that are communicated in Barak. That's the primary meaning. The primary meaning of Barak is not to bless. It is to bow down, to be on one's knees, to diminish oneself. Is that God does have, there are times where he does say that knees will bow. But when those knees are bowing, it's all because those people are being judged. Man judged God. You know, man ripped the flesh off God, put him on a death stake. And so even when God diminished himself in the most extreme point, it wasn't an act of judgment, because man was judging God, and because God had agreed that he would take all of man's sins so that we wouldn't be judged. So those of us who avail ourselves of the fact that God is willing to diminish himself like a father to lift us up, never find ourselves on our knees. So Barak, particularly in the context of the last statement, where we were created in the shadow of God, the words that God selected indicate that we are like God, but fewer dimensions, kind of like the difference between matter and energy. Matter and energy are comprised of the same thing. They just aren't equivalent. Energy is much greater than is matter. So with that realization, God is saying that I made you in my image like I am, just in fewer dimensions. Lesser volume, if you will, as well. But that means that we are at least enough like God that we can relate to him and that he can relate to us. And what God is saying through Barak and through Rabbah and through Perah is that his goal is to bridge that gap. The only gap that that distinguishes us is our relative greatness, the degree to which we flourish. And God is telling us right at the beginning that his goal is to bridge that gap. He is offering us everything that we need so long as we accept it, what he is offering, to elevate us, to increase us to the same seven dimensions that he enjoys, to enjoy time from a whole different perspective and no longer being stuck in it, to having an energy-based being so that we are not constrained with all of the foibles associated with matter and mass. So in this case, God is telling us that he, Barak, diminished himself to lift us up. So the meaning of Barak, particularly in the context of what God did on the Shabbat of Matzah to remove the fungus of sin from our soul, is indeed profound. But the message also resident in Barak's etymological roots is interesting. Synonyms include bless, kneel down, adore, provide favor, and extol. A blessing is a communication which invokes favor. A favor is an unearned gift. Adoration means that the gracious gift was provided by way of love, and that it leaves us extol, which is a word which means, in a word, to lift up, to take up and lift up, which is God's entire purpose. When we return, we'll speak with Vince, who is calling in from Wyoming, as whether or not Christianity is the worst religion.
A year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that